Hi there, yous. Maria Zylstra with Lingua Franca here now on ABC Radio National. We talked last week about the pronominal you and its lack of complexity in English, being able to be singular and plural, as well as to be used for familiars and one's elders and betters. And actually, the same thing pretty much goes in both Cantonese and in Mandarin too, I'm told, so that a child can use the same form of you while speaking to a grandmother, as well as to someone his or her own age. But overlaying that is a cultural script, prescribing other forms of address to be used, including specific kinship terms that are very important socially, so kids get verbal prods to get them right, and that those who marry in need also to know. John Wakefield is one such, a teaching fellow at Hong Kong Polytechnic University in the Department of Chinese and Bilingual Studies, and his speciality is the contrastive analysis of Chinese and English, something he's had plenty of opportunity to study there in Kowloon, where he's racked up, what is it, John, a total of some 22 years since first arriving there from the States in 1983?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you learned Cantonese, the main language of Hong Kong, there?
Yes, I started learning it in 1982, and I've been using it every day since.
Which means you've had to learn a whole new repertoire of forms of address and the appropriate ways that people refer to each other in their social intercourse.
Yes, in Chinese it's very important that you address people according to their, I don't know, rank might not be the right term, but where they fit within the social hierarchy. And in Chinese, the terms are much more intricate. So an uncle on your father's side has a different term from an uncle on your mother's side. And if the uncle is older than your father, then yet another term than if he were younger than your father.
Right. Now, as well as learning that method of social intercourse and the appropriate forms of address, because you work in linguistics, you've made a cross-cultural study of it.
Yes. It's an attempt to explain the culturally influenced verbal behavior that people have. So, for example, in English, we would normally use what's called a WH imperative. So we would use a question, or it's actually not a question, it's an interrogative to get someone to do something. So we would say, could you open the window, please? Whereas in Israeli, in Israeli culture, in Hebrew, for example, they would just say it directly. They would use an imperative.
Open the window.
Yes, but then they might add something like a dear or some term of endearment. So it is polite, but there's a different understanding in the culture that I'm assuming you'll do this for me because we're part of a group. So it's more group-oriented in that sense. Whereas in English, I'm recognizing you as an individual, so I form it as an interrogative, and I'm recognizing your right to not do it. Though I expect you to do it for me, but I'm by wording it in that way, I'm recognizing your right as an individual. And in Chinese, they have both forms, but it would be very unusual for a parent to use that with a child. So a parent would not say, you know, could you turn on the TV? The parent would just tell the child to turn on the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's different forms, but then there are conversational routines that can also be looked at. And it's when a child is put in the presence of another adult, just when an adult comes into their presence. The caregiver then will tell them that they need to address this adult using the term that recognizes where they fit within the social hierarchy. So if it's just an older male, then they would call them older brother. If it's a man, then call him uncle. If it's a woman, auntie, etc.
And that's regardless of whether they are actually brother,
that's
uncle,
correct.
Grandmother.
Yeah.
Those kinship terms are just used generally.
Right, right. And so just the fact that an elderly woman is elderly, she would still be called grandma by the child.
And this is what amounts to a social acknowledgement.
Yeah, it seems to be very important within Chinese culture to recognize difference between gender and age.
But I mean also simply to acknowledge the presence of particularly an older person or an adult person for a child.
Yes. It's important that the child acknowledges, and that's true. So in American culture, which I contrasted this with, it's okay if a child is quite shy. The adult might not expect the child or require the child to say anything when an adult comes in their presence. So if a neighbor comes over to visit, then the adult might say something like, oh, look, it's Mr. Brown or Kevin. And then the child may say something, but is not required to.
Right, right. Well, one thing that's interesting is how you reckon that this Cantonese way of speaking that meets certain cultural expectations in social situations, that that's been adopted into Singapore English as well. So that the cultural expectations have kind of been grafted on English.
Yes, that's interesting. And so it is a cultural need that those who speak Singapore English have, because a very large part of that community is Chinese, and they've brought that part of their culture into their verbal behavior.
Right, yes. So that culture is reflected in this linguistic repertoire.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, John, it seems relatively complex, that repertoire.
Well, the routine is not so complex because it is very fixed. But what underlies it, it's very difficult to really figure out what's going on in people's minds. I mean, these cultural scripts are supposed to represent, some subconscious thought, and it's very difficult to say exactly what that is. And there's a lot of different types of verbal behavior that you see in the Chinese communities that seem to relate to this.
What kinds of other behaviors are you referring to here?
Well, just the treatment or what is said to children in general. So in most cultures, when you deal with a very young child, say a 3 or 4 year old, in most cultures, adults would feel that this child really needs to be guided and in a lot of cases really needs to be told what to do. I just think that in Chinese culture that goes on for much longer. And the Chinese seem to feel that a child is going to be much better off if they always listen to adults. There seems to be this thing of older equals wiser. That in English culture, we also have that, but an old person is not always wise. But a wise person tends to be someone who's older and has experience. So you aren't necessarily wise just because you're old, but I think in Chinese culture there seems to be this tendency that you need to respect the elderly and treat them as being wise. And so from a very young age, they try to form children into people who will always listen to their parents and elders, especially their parents. And this is, in the literature, there's been a lot of talk about, in Chinese culture, in the child rearing, there's love withdrawal and shaming. And I think that this can be explained in the sense that if you make your love conditional, then it will make it more likely that the child will listen to you, because they are worried that if they don't, then you're not going to love them. And this term for love is the same. It also can mean something like want. And relatives will joke with a very young child and say, oh, your mommy doesn't love you or doesn't want you. It's kind of hard to distinguish between the meaning, because it doesn't translate directly into English. And the child will be crying, and the group of adults will be laughing, thinking that's very funny. And to an English speaker, that might seem quite cruel to the child. But in their mind, I guess they're sort of nurturing the child to be someone who will listen to the adult, and then in the long run, this is going to be just what the child needs.
Is it explained, do you think, John, simply by that in Western cultures, there's a lot more room for individualism, whereas in traditional Chinese culture, you don't have so many individualistic options?
Well, there certainly is a big difference in the mindset of, you know, within the culture of being individual versus part of a group. And you see that, I see that in my wife's family. We're very strongly group-oriented. And I see a lot of conflict between interracial marriages, because I have a lot of Western friends who have married Chinese wives, and a lot of them have had trouble getting used to this idea of, you know, feeling, you know, the wife seems to have certain expectations that you would only have if they were really a unit rather than two separate individuals. And this can cause some conflict. And I think that my daughter sometimes feels this resentment of being expected to do certain things. But you can't really say, you know, of course, one culture is one way, another culture is another way, and then everybody in that culture is that way. I mean, in conservative families within America, you have the, you know, strict father figure, and you must do what I say, and you do it just because I say that that's what you should do.
Yeah, I tell you so.
Yes.
Well, I guess just finally then, I'm interested to know whether, I was interested that you'd pointed out that in Singapore English that there's this Chinese cultural way that's been grafted on. But I'm interested whether there's any kind of loosening up of these kind of strictures of behaviour that you seem to indicate are more to do with just fixed ways of behaving, as there's more and more contact with, you know, the global world, whether that isn't having any kind of effect of loosening those strictures.
Yes, so certainly it's much less important than it was in the past to closely follow these rules. And you'll see that in the fact that a lot of the younger generation don't know nearly as many terms for, you know, all the kinship terms. So what is the name for the older sister of your maternal grandmother, for example? The older generation might know those kinds of terms, where the younger generation doesn't. What are the reasons for that? Well, I'm sure it's very complex. Part of it might be just because of how it's much less likely that families are living together in large groups, and so it's much less likely that they're going to use these terms so often. Globalization, exposure to English, all kinds of things are involved with this.
On the phone from his office in the Department of Chinese and Bilingual Studies at Hong Kong Polytechnic University in Kowloon, Dr. John Wakefield. For Lingua Franca here on ABC Radio National, I'm Maria Zylstra, and don't forget, you can hear and read about a myriad other kinds of verbal behaviour at abc.net.au/rn/linguafranca. Send me a message while you're at it, why don't you? How's that for a cross between a polite imperative and an interrogatory request? Du!
In 1883, a young Aboriginal man from Fraser Island is in the French city of Lyon. A long way from home, he agreed to have his entire body moulded in plaster.
It brings me face to face with one of my forebears.
I found the cast really quite deeply moving.
Anthropologists had these demands that the people serve as objects, but of course no person is an object.
Cast Among Strangers, on a way, and you can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.